Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, why are you currently in the closet?
Well, this isn't going to work, really, because this isn't a visual podcast, Jimmy. But in order for us to be able to have high-quality audio, I have decided to move myself into my closet, which, by virtue of the fact that it is full of jumpers that I'm not wearing at the moment, because it's summer in New York, where I live, they are absorbing all of the sound and hopefully are creating a better audio experience for our dear listeners. And if not, well, fuck it. And I'm just sat in a warm closet.
I mean, I knew the problem with New York real estate prices was severe, but...
Oh, you are funny. Ha ha. And during Pride Month as well, my God.
That's very topical, actually, closet-related jokes, given it is Pride Month. Thus far, I mean, we're halfway through Pride Month, and unless you really skedaddle on the podcast after this one, we're not going to get a Pride-related topic, I don't think.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah? You feel okay about that?
Yeah, it means nothing's gone wrong.
Interesting.
So far, really, yeah.
Okay, food for thought, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we could go straight into a Pride topic right now, if you like. Like, I went to Brooklyn Pride last week.
Yeah.
It was lovely. There was the whole thing that they've commissioned a load of NYPD force cars to have decals that are Pride-related. And on one of the decals it says, "All colours are beautiful," which... acronymizes to ACAB, which also means all cops are bastards.
Do you think that was deliberate, or?
I hope so.
It was clever if it was.
I love the naughtiness of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad. Good work, New York Police Department. It's possibly not a phrase that is said very often.
Yeah, sure.
What are we actually going to be talking about, Jazza, rather than the color of police cars?
Well, Jimmy. I feel like, is there a single politician that isn't being arrested at the moment? So we talked about Nicola Sturgeon last episode, so we're not going to talk about her. But we've had the two big blonde boys have had a bit of an eventful couple of weeks, haven't they? So Boris Johnson, as one of them, there was a committee that asked a load of people some questions. They wrote down what they thought about what they found out and decided that, oh yeah, Boris Johnson, bit of a twat.
I think you're slightly editorialising what the Privileged Committee found.
I mean, I may be paraphrasing, but show me where I'm wrong.
I think specifically speaking, they found that he misled Parliament when he said that, you know, he wasn't breaking rules over lockdown.
Which I would argue is twattish behaviour.
Sure, but calling Boris Johnson a twat is quite non-specific, I would say.
Sure, got it. Yeah. And we pride ourselves in our specificity on this broadcast.
Where possible, I think.
Where possible. And he got to have a look at that report beforehand and then quit before they could do anything about it. And now they're saying that they're not going to let him back into Parliament at all. It goes to a vote... It's probably already gone to a vote, to be completely honest, by the time you listen to this.
Oh, I see. You're not trusting my uploading skills.
Definitely not.
Okay. That's probably fair. I mean, it is...
Feel free to prove me wrong.
It's probably past Monday the 19th of June by the time you hear this. So, you'll know the result.
You'll know the result by then. But yeah, it's all a bit of drama, especially... And, oh God, the word unprecedented does get thrown around a lot at the moment, doesn't it? But this is an unprecedented thing that a former Prime Minister is going to be banned from accessing Parliament. That's a pretty big deal.
Pretty big deal. Speaking of pretty big deals, Jazza, Donald Trump.
My God, I'm so tired. So, I'm
is
really
is that
grateful.
Related to what we're going to talk about, or just a comment on your declining health?
Well, maybe there is a correlation here, but it can be quite confusing following the Donald Trump story, because he is running for president, But then he's also been indicted, but he's been indicted twice. But there are also a couple of investigations ongoing in different states surrounding allegations, stuff that he's also been a bit of a twat about. I'll say that again. So he's been indicted twice, once in New York for paying hush money to Stormy Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The former porn star. He's been indicted in Florida, which is the most recent one, which is why he's in the headlines at the moment, for fiddling, keeping classified documents in places where they shouldn't be kept.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's also still under investigation in Georgia for asking somebody to find 12,000 votes so that he could win the state of Georgia in the election in 2020. And he's under investigation in the District of Columbia because of all of that shit that went down on January the 6th with that shaman who went and sat in the speaker's chair and all of that kind of stuff.
Just to be clear, not a real shaman, I think we should point out.
Fair, fair. Small s shaman.
I mean, obviously all shamans are fake in a sense, but this guy, what, you
God,
know.
Don't, no, let's not turn this into a... Let's not do this. Let's not discredit a whole, like, actual tradition that people have.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying this is not a authentic shaman, is what I'm saying.
Sure, he's got a nice hat, though.
I think he's in jail now, isn't he? The
I think so, yeah.
It, yeah.
All of this stuff around Donald Trump is, again, unprecedented. Has done absolutely nothing for his polling and his standing in the Republican primary, which he is currently part of. All of the opinion polls are pretty flat, even though his broader approval ratings in the whole of the United States have they're not as good as they were than before he was indicted. So at least I guess there's that good thing. Anyway,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, analyze, etc.
A lot to process, as some people might say. A lot to unpack.
Thoughts and prayers. Yeah.
But the last thing we're going to be talking about, which has nothing to do with anyone getting arrested, but is something that I sent to Jazza to provoke him.
It worked as well.
So there's been.
I was sat in a coffee shop this morning reading that article, seething.
I'm sorry that I spoilt your coffee earlier today.
Gripping ever tighter my cold brew with oat milk.
So this is an article from the London Times, not the New York Times, saying that we should cheer the decline of humanities degrees by Emma Duncan.
What a stupid title. Stupid title.
Save it for the main segment, all right. So this is the news that fewer people are taking humanities degrees and there's more people taking STEM degrees, which is...
In England,
importantly,
should say. Yeah.
Which is partly the result of, or according to Emma Duncan's thinking, is partly the result of the rise in tuition fees. So it's purely a cost thing. So students are looking to get more bang for their buck, i.e. better job prospects when they leave university. And it was also down to various government measures to encourage people to take STEM degrees and do things like apprenticeships and that sort of thing. And I think roughly speaking, I'm going to agree with the article and Jazza is going to be furiously rebutting it in various ways. Is that fair?
Yeah, that'll be fun. Some fireworks for everyone.
Exactly. Okay, shall we play some music, talk about the Patreon account and get on with it?
Oh, Jimmy, I'd absolutely adore that. Let's do it.
So it's been a while since we've released an episode, and that means it's also been a while since I've been able to thank our loyal patrons who have stuck with us all these years, and I hope been missing us these last few months. Those who go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable get access to bonus segments for every episode, such as our discussion of the coronation this time round. Most excitingly, they get a chance for me to butcher their name at the start of every episode. Thank you very much to Alice L, Andrew Kilpatrick, Archie, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Jer Carney, Ilona Domkina, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Michael Markman, Nick, Seb Kales, Tahar Khan, Theo, and Ubel Noig.
I'm going to ask,
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, you go ahead.
So, Jimmy, from the perspective across the pond, I think that it's actually really... don't laugh at me. I'm trying to make a point. The interesting thing about viewing foreign media analysis of what's happening with Boris Johnson is that it is pretty unanimous in this is a really bad thing. And I think it's similar to when I'm in the UK and you read about like what's happening with somebody like Trump, who we'll talk about later.
Mm.
And when you're seeing something about Trump, like it is unanimously from a UK or a French or a Spanish, whatever perspective, everyone's like, this man's a nutter, it's really bad. Whereas if you're in the US and you're reading stuff about Trump, there is more nuance often in the way that the stories around him are sometimes framed, depending on your, like, you'll get the analysis that is on Trump's side. From what I have seen for the Boris Johnson report, I'm struggling to find anybody apart from Nadine Dorries who thinks that he's been hard done by.
I think,
and maybe
fair.
A few people in Uxbridge who have been interviewed by the BBC who are just like, who are very Brenda from Bristol, like, not another one.
Just prefer the incumbent candidate to stay just so they don't have to vote in another election. So
I empathise. how much, like, what have I missed? Like, who is actually in Johnson's corner? Is there anyone in Johnson's corner at the moment? Because from where I'm sitting in my closet in Brooklyn, it seems like there isn't anybody.
I mean, it doesn't sound like the best perch to gain insight into what's going on around the world.
I don't know what you're trying to
imply. As nice a closet as it looks from the other end of this webcam. I think I agree with you. I don't think there's that many people who like Boris Johnson in the media at the moment. Admittedly, I don't read The Telegraph. I'm sure there are opinion pieces in The Telegraph that are saying he's been hard done by. I think particularly people who, you know, were quite sceptical about lockdowns anyway. But even within that, the people who didn't like lockdowns still largely blame Boris Johnson for implementing them, I think. And some of them perhaps hate him more than most because they detect in him somebody who was sceptical about lockdowns from an instinctive perspective and still implemented them. So I think it's pretty hard to find anyone who's got a good word to say about him. Before recording this podcast, I was reading some coverage in The Times. I think it was probably Tim Shipman who was writing it. And it was all these anonymous sources being quoted close to Boris Johnson, somebody who'd been nominated as an official spokesperson, but still off the record, in a sense, still unnamed. Basically,
there has been a lot of off the record stuff. I guess people are waiting for the vote, right?
I think there's way too much off the record reporting around Boris Johnson specifically. And I guess that's characteristic of his premiership as well. But it's all these people saying, oh, Johnson will be back. He's going to go into submarine mode, I think was what was said. And he's going to pop up after the next general election, maybe a year or so after whoever replaces Rishi Sunak has been appointed and is then going to try and get back into Parliament and become leader of the Tory party again. At this stage, all of that stuff seems really implausible to me, to be honest. Like, I get the fact that Boris Johnson is still quite popular among normal Conservative members. And, I mean, I haven't checked the polling on this, but I could believe that he might win a leadership election if he ran in one. I think, was it autumn? It must have been autumn. It was when Liz Truss got kicked out of office, basically, and they were looking to replace her. And I think the polling around that time indicated that if Boris Johnson had actually run, he'd have won a leadership election. I think the main thing that was preventing him from doing so was he's still so hated among other Conservative MPs that...
This is the problem. Yeah. He doesn't have the parliamentary... And this is the problem still now, right? Despite the fact that this parliament and the majority was led by him in the 2019 election, he still is, it seems like he's more unpopular than not among the Conservative members of Parliament, and they really are the block for him being able to continue to have a career, at least at the moment, right?
I think so. I mean, there is also the not insignificant factor that most of the British public also dislike him, and I think for that reason he would struggle to win a general election. I mean, I think Rishi Sunak does better among the British public than Boris Johnson, which definitely seems to matter given that the Tories are now, what is it, 18 months or so away from the next general election.
At least, right? It's the
So,
end of next year. It
end of,
has to happen
yeah, end of
by.
next year roughly. And yeah, I can't. Obviously, people have written off Boris Johnson before, and they have said similar things to what I'm about to say, but it just doesn't seem that there really is any route back for him at this point.
Do you think that he wants it a route back?
Yeah,
Because at the
I
moment,
do get that
I've seen
impression.
that there's briefing that they are telling the supporters of Boris Johnson not to vote against the Privileges Committee recommendations on Monday.
Yeah, so the Privileges Committee, which sparked this all off, obviously found him guilty of misleading Parliament about the various Partygate allegations. And as you say, many
Which was
people.
essentially there were lockdown parties. Everybody knew that they were breaking the restrictions. There was stuff like people were told to leave while they were leaving to make sure they were social distancing for the cameras, and that Boris Johnson claimed to not think that any restrictions were broken, which they found implausible because he was there every night on a podium telling people about the restrictions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
The only thing I think you can vaguely say in defense of all of that is that probably a lot of these people working so closely together anyway, whether it actually made that much difference in terms of spreading the virus that they would have a drink at the end of a night, probably not in many ways, but sometimes it's the form of the
It
thing, and
was
it
kind of
is,
the principle of it,
yeah,
really, wasn't
exactly.
it? Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's obviously, I mean, at the time, I think when he said to Parliament, I don't remember exactly when this was, but when he said that he, didn't think that he had broken any rules with these various things, I think it was kind of obvious he was lying even back then. And it's taken, in the manner of a lot of these inquiries, it's taken them quite a long time to actually come to the conclusion that everybody had already come to anyway.
Yeah.
So in that way, it seems a bit theatrical, all of this. But yeah, as you were saying, some of his allies will abstain on the vote to kind of authorize, or what was the word, rubber stamp the Privileges Committee reports, which would have had the, if he was still an MP, because he's resigned, it would have had the effect of forcing a by-election on him, and because it would have suspended him for 90 days from Parliament.
I think it was originally going to be 10. Right, which is long enough to have a by-election. Well, no, then there has to be a
There has to
petition,
be a
a
petition,
recall petition, and if it gets enough signatures in his constituency, which it may have, or may not, like who knows? We'll never know. But then he would have had a by-election in his seat, and ultimately, the people who he represents in Parliament, the people of Uxbridge, they would have been able to decide whether or not he stayed as an MP or not. But they extended because he saw the report before it was published, said that it was a kangaroo court and threw his toys out the pram and quit as an MP before they were able to do anything, which is why we then got revisions, it sounds like, that extended his provision, like what his suspension would have been, to 90 days, which is pretty
Right.
extreme.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I hadn't un understood that.
And then that revision also is where the we propose removing his ability to apply for a parliamentary pass, which is usually allowed for all ex-members of parliament to be able to apply for that pass.
Yeah, well, yeah, because normally most ex-MPs basically have access to parliamentary grounds indefinitely once they've left the office.
Yes. Well, no, they have to apply for
I
it
didn't, I
sounds
didn't,
like
I didn't realize they
first.
had to apply for it, but
Yeah.
it sounds as though if you apply for it, it's pretty much granted.
Yeah.
Like,
Sure. Yeah.
so yeah, a lot of this stuff is kind of extraordinary in various ways.
Yeah, like an ex-PM isn't allowed to go to Parliament anymore if he's not like a guest of somebody. Like, I guess he'd still be allowed in if somebody like signs him in as a guest. That ain't that hard, but he's not he's not allowed to ever wander about.
Well, presumably he
which
can
is crazy.
He can come in as a member of the public as well, right?
I don't. Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's really his. It's not really his scene to be up in the viewers' gallery, is it?
I guess so. So, I mean, basically, this actually, in many ways, though, doesn't look that bad for him, in as much as he's going to go away and make loads of speeches and make money out of those speeches. He's already signed up to a column with the Daily Mail, where he's going to get paid somewhere between £500,000 and £1 million a year. I think I read. So,
which also breaches parliamentary regulations, right?
Yeah, so
even as an ex-MP, he shouldn't be taking this job.
Yeah, so he's immediately breached the ACOBA rules, which is the Advisory Committee on Business Appointments, and they've already said this is a clear breach of rules. To do with the ministerial code, actually, that he should have basically run it past the committee before accepting the new job, but this is kind of standard Johnson behaviour, really, isn't it?
Yeah, he doesn't really care, does he?
So, and ACOBA is fairly pretty toothless. I'm not really sure they can do anything about it, actually, which is one of the many problems with how...
They can basically just go, please don't.
Yeah, basically. So, I mean, he's kind of set himself up with quite a good platform to be complaining about various things. And I mean, he's already been kind of a thorn in the side for Rishi Sunak, and I guess he'll continue doing that from outside of Parliament rather than within it.
Yeah, he has tried very hard to throw him under the bus, hasn't he?
Rishi Sunak or...
Boris has tried to throw Rishi under the bus by being like, the current PM was also at those parties, also got a fine, etc, etc. And it's so clear, like, he's been asked things. And also, because just before this was released, his honours list was announced, right?
Yes, I was going to say, yeah.
That's the reason that a few other people have resigned as MPs as well, because Nadine Dorries wanted to be made a dame or whatever. Lovely, good for her.
As I understand it, she was promised by Boris Johnson that she would be made a peer, and then Boris Johnson, you know, surprise, surprise, couldn't follow through on that promise. And so we got this weird thing where Nadine Dorries, I think, said she wasn't going to resign as an MP, and then decided to resign and then seemed to backtrack on resigning, and it was all going
to
and fro.
I think to date on recording she still hasn't technically resigned, and there is something, from what I understand from what the BBC have said, there's like this weird function where you get made like a temporary lord, essentially, which disqualifies you from being a member of parliament.
Yes.
You actually cannot quit as a member of parliament.
Yeah, that's
and so
correct.
You get made like lord of like Greggs or whatever, and then you can't and then you can't be an MP anymore, so you have to you have to have that removed. And there's only two of these roles at any one time, so parliament can only deal with this. So this is such British constitutional trollop, but you can only have two people quitting at any one time, and so they've had Boris Johnson quit and somebody else who I cannot remember the name. So they have
Nigel Adams.
Thank you. They have now both. They are no longer members of Parliament.
Yeah.
Whereas Nadine Dorries had to wait, and while she's waiting, I reckon she's going to chicken out, you know?
Interesting. I was convinced she'd actually gone, he says, Googling in the background to make sure.
Yeah, have a little look. But from, I think, yesterday, she technically still hadn't accepted.
It looks as though you're correct, yeah. So the two positions are the Crown, is it the Crown Steward and Bailiff of the Chiltern Hundreds, and the Crown Steward and Bailiff of the Manor of Northstead. And these are kind of unpaid Crown roles, which, as you say, means that you can no longer be an MP if you accept one of these roles, and that the roles are unpaid. It's really, I mean, surely there should be some way that you could just resign as from being an MP. This, I mean, it's one of the many antiquated things.
I don't know.
Parliament.
You know
I
what?
I guess
I do quite
hurt.
Like this tomfoolery, this silliness, and I love that we're getting. I love that we're getting this like ability of Nadine Dorries to like throw her toys out the pram and be like, "This is Rishi Sunak, a posh boy, stopping a working class girl from Liverpool." I've never heard her speak with a Liverpudlian accent until she made that statement, I'll be completely honest. From being able to kind of like make it to the highest house in the land, blah, 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 blah. Like, she's full of absolute bullshit, and I'm enjoying seeing all of that bullshit slosh around everywhere and make her look like an absolute knobhead.
I mean, she is kind of full of shit in various ways, but... And I, you know, I'm not, I don't, I kind of never buy these, those kind of, I suppose people complaining that they're being blocked by posh boys. Was Nadine Dorries the woman who called David Cameron and George Osborne ignorant posh boys who don't know the price of milk? Was that her or was that someone else?
I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell you.
But, I mean, to be fair, she's actually, she's had a more impressive backstory than quite a few.
Yeah, she's self-made, sure.
Yeah. So
yeah, she like wrote a load of erotic novels. That's difficult.
I mean, could you do it?
Well, I've got a humanities degree, so we might talk about
that
later.
We'll come back to that later, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess before we move on to Donald Trump, Jazza, I'm going to try and get a prediction out of you on this, because I feel like I've already nailed my colours to the mast. Will we see Boris Johnson as a significant political player? I was going to say in the Conservative Party, but I suppose something that has been mooted that doesn't seem very likely is that he joins forces with Nigel Farage or Lawrence Fox or someone
That's
else.
That's not going to happen. I don't see that happening.
I don't see the splinter party thing happening at the moment. Well, you know, irrespective of where Boris Johnson is involved, I think that the Tory party is probably going to hemorrhage votes the next election. And it's going to be a case of rebuilding from there for the right in British politics. But could you see Boris Johnson coming back?
Never say never. He's done it before, hasn't he? People used to say about how difficult it would be for him to be able to make it back into Parliament and then become Prime Minister, because there isn't an obvious like segue from being London Mayor into being a national politician again. And he still managed to make that happen, managed to make that work.
He did, yeah.
I find it very difficult, though. I feel like... I think it is the Brenda from Bristol thing. People are just so over this. I think that any of the glamour that he did genuinely... He did used to have. Any of that glamour that he used to have that people connected with, I think really is gone. And I think it is possible... The way that Donald Trump is kind of like dealing with this is by leaning in really hard to the conspiracy theory side of stuff. Like, he's really whipping up kind of like conspiracy theories that have long histories and kind of like riding the back of them. I don't see... Boris Johnson is a lot of things, but I don't think he aligns himself with that form of politics.
I think apart from anything else, Donald Trump, from what I can see, is much more comfortable with being disliked than Boris Johnson is.
Maybe. I think that's interesting.
I mean, the flip side of that is I think that Boris Johnson is much more comfortable in his status than Donald Trump is. And I think sometimes those two different phenomena are interpreted as the same thing because of how they have expressed themselves. But
sure.
We could sort of go on about this in our next segment, but I think they are two quite different characters, even if people have sought to paint them as equivalent to one another in political terms.
And it's so interesting that they're going through, Boris Johnson hasn't been indicted, he's not being arrested or anything, although he has been like officially fined for this conduct, right?
He was
fined for breaking lockdown rules. And I think because of that, especially over here in my closet in Brooklyn, very often people are like, oh yeah, isn't Boris Johnson just basically Donald Trump? And I really, and it's difficult to explain how he is different. Because I feel like, despite everything, Boris Johnson is still part of the establishment. And he's part of the establishment that sees himself as kind of like greater than and more and above kind of like the rules. He's kind of like almost really old school. Whereas Donald Trump, I think, is brand new and disruptive, really. I don't think we've seen anything in American politics that leans in quite as hard as he does to this populism, at least at the same level that he has. And he's opened up a lot of doors for other politicians that also lean on conspiracy theory and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, my familiarity with American historical politics is possibly not good enough to say whether where Donald Trump fits into all of that. Boris Johnson comes from an immensely privileged background. I mean, he went to Eton, for Christ's sakes. So, he's been unconventional, even in the context of the Conservative Party. But he is still still a posh guy who joined the Conservative Party and used it as a vehicle to attain high office. So, in many ways, that is the tale as old as time. In British political terms, he's unconventional in other ways. So it's always very simplistic when people say, you know, so and so is actually an establishment figure. I mean, one of the obvious comparisons, I suppose, is Nigel Farage, who, you know, went to Dulwich, which again is a fairly prominent public school.
It's a posh school.
He then became a metals trader, which is not a particularly glamorous area of of the financial industry, but he's still a financial guy. So, you know, he's a very privileged guy in many ways, but implicitly was a Thatcherite at a time when it was quite fashionable, still is quite fashionable to be a Thatcherite. So in some ways, quite a conventional figure, but in other ways, not a conventional figure at all. So I think sometimes it's best to talk in specifics, I think, as to the ways in which people are conventional and unconventional. One question before we move on to Trump.
Another final question.
Yeah. If Boris Johnson had backed the Remain campaign, I suppose this requires predicting which way the vote would have gone as a result. But let's say that it still went the same way. So Boris Johnson backs Remain, but Leave still wins.
Yeah.
Because I think his reputation really turned as far as the general public went when he backed Leave, because I think that there were people I know who certainly thought of him quite fondly, at least as far as they thought of any politician fondly, when he was London mayor, and he was seen as quite a fun figure. And I think his reputation was really tarnished because of the connection with anti-immigration sentiment and racism that attached itself to him after he backed Leave. So what sort of politician would he be like now if he'd made a different decision there?
I mean, great question. I think he wouldn't have had to have shackled himself to this part of the party nearly as much. I think he would have been seen more. There would have maybe been more continuity with the Conservative Party brand.
He could have been more of a unifying figure within the Tory party, I think, as somebody with Leave sympathies, but who ultimately backed Remain.
Yeah, it's similar to how Theresa May kind of like positioned herself, but with more glamour, right? Like that's how May like positioned herself. She's like, well, despite all of the problems, I do think that we should remain. And I think it would have probably been more likely that Boris Johnson would have been the next Prime Minister after David Cameron chose to leave. And there wouldn't be this animosity from the Conservative Party towards Boris Johnson, specifically to the Parliamentary Party,
I think also Johnson. Possibly the public at large might not feel the same animosity towards him. Certainly
he would have still been able to... maybe have like the glamorous appeal that he had when he was London mayor, but I don't think that exists anymore.
No, I don't think so. We should talk about Donald Trump. I think I keep hearing in various articles and other bits of social media that still pass my way that Donald Trump kept a lot of classified documents in his toilet. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, that's the fun hook line, isn't it?
Sort of like bog time reading material, by the sounds of it. Is that you're doing your business, you just leaf through a few magazines that you've left in the room.
Yeah, just flip through some of the classified documents about like the nuclear deterrent. You know, lovely light reading. No, I do quite like that because that's like the hook, because there were a load of like photos that were part of this indictment in Miami, which is one of the two indictments that he's has that he's had that he is been subject to, where they took photos of like the places where all of the documents were found, one of which being his loo. But yeah, it's I don't really know what to say about this. I feel like it's very similar to the Donald Trump, to the Johnson thing, because we already know, or anybody with...
I mean, he's obviously guilty of whatever he's accused of, basically.
Yeah, it's so,
right?
it's so obvious that he definitely paid Stormy Daniels to be quiet.
Yeah.
Is hush money. It's obvious that he mishandled sensitive documents. And it seems obvious to me that he put the nation's capital in danger by riling stuff up on January the 6th. And it seems obvious to me that what's the other thing that he's...
It's the Georgia...
Oh, the Georgia thing. There's literally a recording of him saying, "Can you find some votes for me, please?" Like,
yes.
It's pretty explicit. Like, all of the things he is definitely... I feel like it's clear. It's obvious. There's no ambiguity in any of these things. But the people... Everybody has already made their mind up about Donald Trump. You can see this not everyone. But for those who, especially because at the moment there are two interesting things. One is Republicans do not care. Donald Trump is still head and shoulders the favorite above the second place candidate, Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
Who we talked about in a previous episode. And so Donald Trump is still like... unless some crazy stuff goes down in the next year or so, is very likely to be the Republican nomination for president, which he is allowed to be, even if he is arrested. I think technically, even if he's in jail, he's allowed to run for president.
So I was reading, I think it was on Sky News or something, but there was a previous guy who ran for the Socialist Party in 1918. I've lost the link, so I can't give you his name, but... Eunice Debs, I think, or something like that. But he ran for president a couple of times when he was free, and then he was put in jail for criticizing American involvement in World War One, and he still ran for office. The other interesting thing is, you'll remember Joe Exotic, aka Tiger King.
Yeah.
So he is also planning on running to be president. I guess that's part of the appeal. So Joe
wasn't he trying to get a pardon from Donald Trump?
He was
like one of the last things.
Yeah. So Joe Exotic was sent to prison for like...
Nadine Doris of him for him to...
So he was sent to prison for 21 years for trying to procure an assassination of one of his... It wasn't somebody he was working with. It was a rival zoo owner.
Yeah, that lady.
Hello,
cats and kittens.
Yeah, so this was the sort of Netflix phenomenon during the first lockdown back in 2020 about this crazy
zookeeper. We had
nothing
else to watch, to be fair.
Too Hot to Handle was on. I remember it very fondly.
Oh, no, that was where the butt plug robot told people to stop making out, right?
Yeah, and stop touching one another. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You can clearly run to be president from prison because people have done it before and there's nothing in the Constitution that says otherwise. Seemingly, you can also run the White House from prison if you want to. But as some people have pointed out, as president, you could also pardon yourself if you're in jail while being
Hilarious.
President.
Hilarious. Part of me wants that to happen.
It would make a very funny story, but I think in terms of American governance.
Democracy?
It leaves a little bit to be desired, I would argue. But the thing about all of these investigations around Trump, I mean, you say that he's kind of banged to rights on at least a couple of them, if not all of them. And most reasonable people would agree that. Obviously, there's some people who we would see as unreasonable who think that it's all confected or the results of the deep state or whatever. But this is quite serious in as much as, you know, some of the, I mean, I think particularly the Miami investigation, if he's convicted...
It's espionage.
Yeah.
He's being convicted for espionage.
Yeah, for spying against his own country, basically. And he could be sent to jail for the rest of his life. So, That seems quite serious as it goes. This is, I mean,
Yeah.
much more serious than the
Although, so
Johnsons
there's a
thing.
few things that make it that are, yeah, I think it is more definitely more serious than like having a birthday cake. Which is quite like that. I love that that's our version of indicting somebody. Like Donald Trump literally tried to overthrow democracy, and the demise of Boris Johnson was he had few parties.
Yeah, I mean, also to bring in the Sturgeon thing, you know, she was arrested and questioned by the police in connection to mishandling of S&P finances. And the main hook that's come out of this, the main storyline, is this £100,000 motorhome that stayed
Oh my
in
God, I love it
her
so much.
mother-in-law's or was kept in her mother-in-law's driveway for
Can we
some time.
never change as a country? Like,
It's
I
very,
want
very
these to be the
low
political
grade political
scandals.
scandals. I mean, is there anything more depressing than a motor? I mean, no offense to motor homeowners, I'm sure they're lovely, but there's a lack of glamour there, as you say, compared to some of the stuff that's going on in the US. But it's not inconsistent. So this case, the Miami case, which is the one I've been reading most about, this could come to trial in 2014, which is the year of the next presidential election,
Election,
right? And
yeah, which will be in November.
we could have a situation where Donald Trump is being convicted and sentenced. I mean, it might not happen this way, but the timeline could work this way, where he's being convicted and sentenced while he's also one of the leading candidates to be the next president of the US, right?
Yeah, very possible. Yeah, very
That's
possible.
crazy.
Although his the judge that is currently possibly going to be presiding over the Miami case, was a Trump-appointed federal judge. And so people are like kind of kicking off about that. Are they going to give Trump a life sentence when literally her career was because of Donald Trump? Some might say there's a conflict of interest there.
I mean, I would say it's an argument for not having presidents appoint judges. Possibly. It could catch on. I don't know.
You know what? We do keep on coming to this, Jimmy, but I don't think anybody in the US cares what we think.
I mean, to be fair, so this judge, she's not, she may owe her current appointment to Donald Trump, but I mean, was it actually. Was this, it wasn't one of these massively political appointments in the way the Supreme Court is, right? This is a much lower court, right?
But it's still like state level,
Right,
isn't
but
it?
I mean, this is, we're going to give away our lack of intricate knowledge
Oh
of the
no.
US legal system, but yeah, it's not,
But
it's
we've spoken with such authority up until this point.
we have, yeah, but I mean, apart from everything else, if she sent Trump to jail, that wouldn't be bad for her career prospects, or would it? I mean, if she wants to be a Supreme Court judge, maybe a Republican
I mean,
president
she
in the
might get
future
assassinated by the
might.
Proud Boys. That's probably the most dangerous thing that could happen.
I guess that's possible. Yeah, are they still going, the Proud Boys? Are they still a
Oh
thing?
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're proudly part of the 3%. Do you know what that is? I've gone down rabbit holes, Jimmy.
Okay, what is the 3%?
Well, they say that the 3%, American Civil War, only 3% of Americans, no, not the Civil War, the War of Independence, only 3% of Americans took up arms to overthrow the British.
I mean, I can
And
believe
so
that.
now there's it's actually not, it's closer to like 25. But that's like what they say. And so they're saying only 3% of us need to be armed to overthrow government. And so
You're saying half of men during the American Revolutionary War took up arms against the British.
that's what WNYC told me.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding this stat, but it doesn't. I mean, in any war, very few people fight. I mean, that's just kind of a given. Like, even in World War II, which I guess
I
was
don't know, maybe
probably
I'm spreading misinformation. That would
the
be fun.
biggest mass mobilization of men in history. Like, I don't think half of American males would have been, you know, fought
Maybe
during
it was
that.
25% of men.
That seems more likely, just because it's a smaller number. But
I can go even of able-bodied men. We can get keep on making this more plausible.
I don't know. I think 25%. I'm going to want some
I'm literally
clarification on
just
that,
parroting
Jess.
something that I heard on the radio, so don't blame me, all right?
Okay. But it was more than 3%, should we say?
It was
I mean,
more than 3%. But
okay.
yeah, when somebody says that we're part of the 3%, it means that they're planning on taking up arms and overthrowing the American government.
I see. So I think previously I think we've both kind of scoffed at the idea that the ordinary American could actually take up arms against its own government and beat it, given that the American government has tanks and an air force and a navy and nuclear weapons and seemingly UFOs, actually. That's also come out in the past few weeks. But I mean, I don't think the 3%, quote unquote, could win a civil war
Not Jimmy
against its.
just dropping UFOs into the conversation.
We'll get back to it later. So I don't think the 3% could win a civil war against its own government, but I do think they could probably turn America into a hellhole. I think that's probably something that they could
Make it
achieve.
unpleasant at the very least, you
Ex
know.
exceedingly unpleasant. Yeah, I think they could take some inspiration from people like ISIS and that sort of thing. I think they could run a serious insurgency with all the guns that are going around. But I don't know if this is going off on a slight tangent, but I saw that Andrew Sullivan has been on the Trigonometry podcast recently. So this is a conservative British American commentator. I mean, this was a pull quote, but maybe he was warning that the US is very close to violence, basically, which I assume in connection to the Trump thing.
They all think that there's going to be a fucking civil war. Like, I don't know. It is a very violent place here, and it's very stressful, even in Brooklyn. I don't know. I think that as these kind of commentators and these right-wing internet nutters, like, have these conversations and say these things, I think when they say those things, it's not likely to happen. But I think them continuing to say it again and again emboldens and enables people to then at least do something stupid. Like, be it, like, harass people in Target because of, like, LGBTQ plus themed t-shirts, or January 6th is like the big extreme of that, right? I don't know. I struggle to see how anything worse than January the 6th could happen, and I don't think that really can happen again because folks are prepared now. No? Maybe I'm being naive.
I seem to recall that when January the 6th happened, I think me and you found some of the coverage of it a little bit hysterical, is maybe overselling it, but we thought it was a bit overcooked, basically, the reaction to it. That was my impression of both of our reactions.
I think it was really serious. Like, people going into, like, the equivalent of Parliament and, like, storming Parliament. I think that is a really serious thing, but I don't think that the people who were there really had any idea what the fuck they were doing and didn't really. And to be fair, people did die during January the 6th.
Well, one of them was a protester who was shot by a security person, and a couple of policemen died on the day or afterwards. Some of them
Yeah, there was
because of suicide, actually.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Okay, I think you could probably agree with this. I think that we would say that for the politicians, particularly prominent politicians in the buildings at the time, those, whatever you want to call it, the storming of the Capitol, it was a serious threat to their lives, and it's not inconceivable that some prominent politicians, including people like Mike Pence, right, could have been killed had they been
Yeah,
found. But
who's now running for president, so he probably thinks it's all fine.
is he running for president, Mike Pence?
Yeah, he's announced, yeah.
But even though on the day
Lol.
it was a serious threat to certain politicians' lives, there was no way that that was ever going to overturn the result of the election, that particular event.
Correct.
Right.
I
So
agree.
in some ways, it was not the. I
Like,
mean.
American democracy, like, there were specific people's lives, and, like, it isn't a really extreme thing to see people's lives who were in danger. But I do not think the shining city on the hill was under any danger, really.
Say it's in a swamp, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying that to reflect Trumpish rhetoric. I mean, it literally was built on a swamp, Washington, D.C. That is accurate, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. It's not a hill. It's quite relatively flat, as I recall. Have you been to Washington, D.C.?
I have. I wasn't paying attention to the topography, I'll be
Well,
honest.
there you go.
There you go. Yeah, if I ever want to storm the Capitol, I need to make better notes.
Yeah. Oh, you can bring a push bike, and it won't be too strenuous on you because it's quite flat. At least as far as I can remember.
Well, like, what position am I in to storm a Capitol with my undergraduate humanities degree? I don't know if my degree is humanities. Is our languages humanities?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, because it's humanities. Humans do them. Yeah.
You want to change topic? You want to talk about humanities?
Yeah, I'm over this.
Yeah, okay. Bored of this.
Okay. America do it. I think in conclusion, America doing much worse than the UK. Moving swiftly on.
So you said when you read this article over your coffee earlier today, it really upset you, Jazza. Could you talk about those feelings a little bit for me?
I'm really frustrated that the idea of a degree and the value of a degree has been reduced down to how much more money can you earn with that degree. Like,
This is sometimes called the graduate premium, the amount of extra money you can expect from having a degree and therefore getting into a better career versus not having
one. Yes. The reason that people go to university, higher education,
is to get drunk for 3 years.
Is to get drunk for 3 years and is to become more of an expert in an area that then they can take out into, yes, the workforce, but also society at large and contribute to society, be that monetarily or be it through contributions through art or writing or marketing campaigns or whatever the fuck. And there's that thing. Like, I genuinely went to university to study languages because I wanted to learn these languages. Like, I wanted to become better at this, and I wasn't really I was lucky because I was learning Chinese, and at the time everybody was like, oh yeah, learn Chinese and you'll be able to, like, everybody will give you a job at the end of it because that's good. And that, I'll be honest, that didn't really happen. Like, it took me, if I were basing it on my undergraduate degree, I definitely didn't get a graduate's premium from my work based on that stuff. But I was more an expert in a culture. I could interact with that culture
You got one job that you probably, because you used to work for the Taiwanese.
Yeah, there's one job where I used to work for the Taiwanese Trade Board. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And you wouldn't have had that job without...
But I was earning £22,000 a year, and that is not very much money.
God, you were so poor back then. You were almost as poor as me.
God. It was not a well-paid job. But I got to, like, use that degree a lot. But that, like, I didn't go to university to earn more money. I think that, and I get really frustrated that that is seen as kind of like the reason to go to university. You should go to university to deepen your knowledge of something because you're interested in it and you want to go into that field. And I kind of resent the framing of it as like an economic investment.
So I think it's... Shall I say this? This will come across as patronizing because of how my voice is, but I think it is good that for you personally you have that elevated view of university, and it's good that you genuinely wanted to study something to better yourself in a more rounded way than purely an economic way. You know, you didn't just want to get a job doing something. You didn't want to just make more money as a result of studying something. You wanted to study something for studying's sake, and I do think that is a great thing. I think that you are quite unusual.
I agree.
In that respect. I think most people... I mean, so as a American libertarian and academic, ironically, called Brian Kaplan, who has written a book about, critical book about education. And the polling in that book indicates that most people go to uni because they think it will result in them making more money in their job afterwards. That is the primary reason. But that does depend
on the type of degree that you do. But that is more to do with how we value different industries. Like, if you go to university But you're not really going to university to learn law. There could be like law schools. There are law
There are
schools,
law
but
schools, yeah, there are.
you're going to learn how to practice law, and I feel like that is a vocational. We call them degrees now, but I almost feel like the degree, the fact that that is a degree is a misnomer. Like it's almost like the same as going to study to be a teacher. Getting a PGCE is not like a. It doesn't feel like a degree. It is a vocational thing that you do. The same with like stuff like nursing or anything along those lines. Like you're studying for a particular profession, and it is those professions that then have the specific outcomes of you're going to earn more money. But it's because of like a lot of those professions require training, like being an accountant or whatever. But loads of those things you could learn on the job, and maybe things like accountants and things like lawyers should be off doing apprenticeships in law school, in law houses and
I
stuff
mean,
like that, rather than going to university.
to be fair, if you are, I mean, a lot of people study a general degree, so they might do English, for example, and then they do a
And
conversion
then we'll go
course,
into, yeah.
and part of that, basically, any job that involves a kind of vocational education, as you say, there will be some vocational education.
And the skills that you earn in these, in what this fucking writer, like, who was like, oh yeah, I love the classics, but nobody should go and like study Jane Austen. And I'm like, but you're not just having like, you aren't, if you go, if you're going to like a proper, if you're like doing uni properly and actually learning stuff, you are learning transferable skills that are going to be with you forever.
I did so.
As opposed to, stop it, I'm not finished. As opposed to, like, when have I ever fucking used trigonometry? Never. Never once have I used trigonometry outside of a GCSE maths classroom. Whereas I use the analytical skills that I have had, that I learned through learning humanities degrees, media, the ability to like understand and interpret media, rhetoric, and all of that kind of stuff. Those really are things that I have used every single day. And yeah, it might be seen as like a soft. I believe she calls them like fluffy skills and fluffy degrees. Fuck off. These are hard skills that I'm genuinely using every single day, that help me to understand and move through the world and become actually a better economic participant, yes, but also a more interesting person who's functioning in society and understands the consequences of all of the shit that's going on in the world right now. So bugger off.
As
There I
evidenced by
am.
this podcast, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't really think transferable skills exist, to be honest with you. Not really in the sense you're talking about. I mean, obviously there's some skills that are similar. Like if you learn to play guitar, you get a kind of general music knowledge. You train your ear, as they say, and that means that
Yeah.
if you try and pick up the piano, you've got a head start on somebody who doesn't have any musical skills. So they exist in that sense,
That's, yeah, exactly. How is that not a transferable skill?
but all this analytical stuff you're talking about, you're a bright guy, Jazza. You think about things. You didn't need to go to university in order to learn how to analyze things because
Yes, I
you're
did.
a smart guy.
Yes, I did.
That's
No,
just.
I did need to go to university to be able to understand these things and to be able to like write properly and to be able to articulate myself properly and be in these spaces with people where I was challenged and encouraged to debate and all of that kind of stuff. I did
How
need to go to
much
university
debating
for
is
that.
there in a what was your degree in? Was it was Chinese, wasn't it? Or
It was Spanish and Hispanic and Latin American studies and Chinese and Chinese language and Chinese culture.
quite a range then, I guess. But
Well, it was like I did Spain and China, let's learn about a load of stuff. But like a lot of it was like literature, or it was the politics of those countries and being able to like learn about those systems, and then really did kind of like allow me to apply it to my understanding of British politics. Otherwise, I'd just been some twat who reads The Guardian all the time again.
I don't know about that. I think, I mean, I suppose this is we're sort of treading into nature nurture debate territory here, but I think you probably, absent university, I think you would have found ways to stimulate those kind of muscles that you have, and entertain those instincts that you have. And I think you'd have learned how to think anyway. I'm not really persuaded that university is a necessary.
I'm not saying that people can't think when they go to university, but I genuinely do have skills that I learnt from like media analysis, for example. Like I understand when a piece of media has like a point of view, and I am able to articulate that so much better than me having never gone to kind of like a media analysis class.
Okay,
and those things
enough.
Are important, and you might not be able to kind of like put a price on it, but we need people who aren't just calculating the angle that a fucking bridge needs to be. Like, obviously that's a really important job to be able to do. But there's more to life than fucking bridges.
Possibly, but I think that you're, again, I think your experience at university, you clearly got an awful lot out of it, and fair enough, but most of the people I know who went to university...
Yeah, and I will also say, I don't think most people should go to university. I think that I think as many people who want to go to the university to be able to do the kind of thing that I said I did, to further their knowledge and to be a more, like, active, productive person in society and to be able to understand the society that they live in, more people should be able to do that. But the system that we have in the moment, yes, student loans are not the same as like normal loans. But the amount of money, like 70 grand of debt hanging over you that you have to pay off for God knows how long, and most people are not going to be able to pay that off, is a disincentive for you being able to go to university to be able to study these things. And you see that with the difference between, as it was mentioned in the article, the difference between the stuff that people in Scotland choose to study, where there are no student fees, compared to England, where now you leave with 70 grand worth of debt.
See, I saw that line, and I remembered that when the divergence began between England having student fees and Scotland not having them, actually applications for university places went up faster in England than they did in Scotland. So I'm not terribly persuaded by that one data point. I mean, it might be
no,
true,
but
it might not be.
But it was around what people are studying, right? It was about specifically humanities degrees.
Yeah, I mean, I think there has been, this certainly anecdotally, when, you know, students get interviewed, there's more of a focus on value for money than there was previously, I think, in the English system. Students are asking for more kind of evidence that their degrees are useful, and that I think there's also been some indication that there's been more pressure on their tutors to actually mark up results, because, you know, people want to leave universities with better qualifications than they perhaps did previously. Uh-huh. So yeah, that obviously is a factor in all of this. Despite our, you know, furious argument about this thing, we probably kind of agree that there has been an inappropriate conflating of the degree as something economically valuable versus degree as something.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the big lie, you know, of tertiary education in England.
Yeah,
is that you should go to university because then you're going to earn more money, and I think that was implied to be, and the rhetoric around it, big word, learnt it at uni.
I mean, no.
The rhetoric around it has been very, has implied, I think, that it applies to all degrees, like just go to university. Whereas obviously the subject that you do and the subject that you study is going to be the thing that is more important, right?
I think that
that opens up a particular door for you.
The difficulty is that quite a lot of jobs that used to not require a degree, I mean, you mentioned some of them, like nursing, for instance, now require degrees, and also just a lot of fairly ordinary
office
jobs.
Well, it's not really a degree, is it?
Yeah, okay,
like nursing degree is a vocational course. It's just, it's now called a degree.
I think they're actually quite different from the previous nursing vocational courses that used to exist, and I think they've become more academized, if that's the right word.
They have to write essays.
Which I think a lot of people would possibly suggest isn't really a necessary thing when you're training to be a nurse, but that's kind of by the by. But move away from those kind of, you know, the nursing things, and I mean, accounting qualifications are an entirely different ballgame, but things like office jobs. Now, to be like an HR manager or something, when I was entering journalism, there were a lot of job ads that I saw. There's still a lot of job ads I see, actually. And I've been in journalism for 9 years, that say degree required or degree or sometimes equivalent experience, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's been a really unhealthy trend, I think most people would agree, to actually demand degrees for jobs where there's no real good reason why you need a degree per se. I mean, I get the idea that.
Yeah, but that's not the people who are going to university who changed that trend. It is the generation of the lady who wrote that fucking article who decided now everybody, because they're the ones writing the job descriptions. Like they're the ones who decided that like having a degree was the thing that you needed to have. We're just, well, it's not, I'm not Gen Z, but it's like they're responding to what and they've been told is necessary. It's not their fault.
Well, our generation, it was the same. You know, people,
Yeah, it was the same. I feel like actually it was probably worse for us, no?
for a certain, depending on what school you went to, but certainly in my school, it was expected that you went to uni. And
Yeah, same for me.
obviously, you know, there are schools where it kind of wasn't expected that you go to uni, but it has created a two-track system in many ways where there are degree jobs and non-degree jobs. And
Yeah.
I don't think that's been particularly healthy for anyone. So it's kind of all a mess, is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, what a mess.
Have we sufficiently exhausted ourselves on this topic that
Yeah, I'm over it.
we can
Thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you're subscribed. Support us on Patreon.
Yeah,
That helps.
it does. We were
Yeah, we're gonna be, what are we gonna talk about? We're talking about, fucking hell, we're talking about Harry and Meghan, aren't we?
Harry and Meghan's podcast specifically. This is hot podcast commentary that we're about to engage in.
Podcast on podcast crime.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right.
But you got to pay for that. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye bye.